Technology Meet.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mymbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
You know, finding the time ain't so easy. Not gonna find it in your coat pocket or cleaning out the attic. Time is elusive. But you can find some extra time at the Pizza Hut all-you-can-eat lunch buffet. Just a few minutes gets you endless oven-fresh pizzas with all kinds of crusts, including America's favorite, the Pizza Hut pan pizza, plus crisp salad and mouth-watering dessert that's ready when you are. The Pizza Hut all-you-can-eat lunch buffet, every Monday through Friday. Pizza Hut. Gather around the good stuff.
Prices, dates, times, items, and participation may vary by location. Dine-in only.
Have you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947? If so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the facts as he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
And now live from Riverside, Iowa, the future birthplace of Captain James T. Kirk of the USS Enterprise, another episode of Wake Up USA, a UFO study. Your host this evening, Joe Montaldo.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I hope everyone is having a great and wonderful, glorious day. I'm sure some of y'all are and some of y'all aren't, but we can hope. We can hope that everybody's having a great day. Tonight's guest is going to be Paula Harris. Should be an interesting show. A couple of things I've been wanting to talk to her about. I didn't get a chance to talk to her last time. We had to reschedule, so hopefully we'll get to talk to her tonight about a couple of good things. She's in the States right now. She's out in California tonight. She was out at the Hawaii conference, so a good friend of ours, Trace, had did an update on that last week, and I guess we'll get another update tonight, so we'll have a couple of opinions. We'll see how this goes. A couple of the things in the news right quick. Now, you know, I've been keeping track of these new mining plans for about 10 years now. You know, there's been a couple of companies that really want to try to mine the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. Well, I was reading today, and Linda handed me this article. It says, there is a plan in motion to build a civilian commercial outpost on Mars by the year 2035. Okay, this is going to be an outpost with people, all right? From there, NASA and the U.S. government, working with Halliburton, believe it or not, and a couple other groups, are planning on taking and building a large facility there and using this as a launching point and a recycling facility for everything they bring off from the asteroid belt. So this is very interesting. It's very dangerous. It's very interesting. It is something that is being worked on and it is being looked at. There's going to be several, 2035 is what I said. I'm thinking this is going to happen before then, and we're just not going to know about it. But the thing about it is we've talked about this 100 times on this show and at least in a different 1,000 other lectures, that if you ever want to get me and you into space, the only way to do that is for commercial industry to get involved, because they'll spend more money. They'll be looking for a tourist, they'll be looking for people to work out in space, and they won't be looking for military and government employees. They'll be looking for civilian employees. So at least this way, a lot of everyday people will get the chance to be in space if they want to go. But it is a good step, and it is moving in the right direction. It is one of these steps that will probably change the course of man and the course of history in times to come. So I find it interesting. They're also talking about there's three civilian probes on the way to Pluto right now. And they're also talking about maybe trying to mine Pluto as well, because Pluto is a very dense planet. So they're thinking that everything there is very compact and would be much easier to take off. But these things are in the works. It is something that we have been discussing. But it is official now that Halliburton and the U.S. government will be seeking funding for this. They will be taking this program forward and moving. Also, there's 24 other companies that will be putting in bids and asking for permission for commercial space programs and commercial development of space. So it's definitely a step in the right direction. And y'all can thank Bill Gates' partner for this, because by flying his little spaceship into space, he made a point that a civilian can do this. So he made a point that civilians can do this, and we can fund it ourselves, and we can make it work. And so, you know, it's a good thing. I mean, it's going to take a long time, and it'll probably take more than 35 years. It'll probably be 75, 80 years before every day Joe Blow gets into space, but it is a move in the right direction, and it was something I was glad to officially hear. I mean, there's been unofficial stories about it for years, but this is the official account where the government and private industry is going to get in bed and start working for the mining of space. Now, you know, what they do with these materials and what we get and what kind of damage we cause while we're out there, I guess this stuff we'll have to cross when we get to that point. But the simple fact that somebody's going to build something on Mars just tickles me, okay? There should have been a Martian colony years ago. There should have been a lunar colony 25 years ago, but that's just me. I'm just ranting and raving now. Oh, and, you know, last week a couple people had asked me. I know a lot of people like to go out on the summer solstice in England and stand in front of Stonehenge. And I was reading this article that Linda had given me, and I noticed that it says that, you know, there'll be a bunch of people out looking at it again, but that the sun doesn't rise directly over Stonehenge anymore in a significant astrological way. So I just thought I'd tell that to my astrological friends out there so they know. And it's one of those little pieces of news that I always kind of wonder about, and, you know, kind of wonder what's happening and who's doing what and what's going on where. But it's one of the things. Now, getting back to Mars, because, you know, this is one of these things. Oh, before I go back to Mars, first of all, I want to thank David for sending me this picture of the RAF UFO. And the reason why now, this is an interesting photo, but it's not an interesting photo because it's a UFO, and it's an interesting photo because I've seen this UFO before, in at least four other pictures. I'm not sure what it is, and it does look like it has some types of wings on it or something, so I'm not exactly sure what this thing's going to turn out to be, but it is interesting, and it is quite a clear picture. So thanks again for that, David. It was kind of nice because I have, like I said, I have seen that before. And what's interesting about that photo is I've seen it in a picture taken over Israel. I've also seen it at the Canadian Air Show. So I'm not exactly sure what it is, but I do find it to be very fascinating. It's just one of those things that fascinates me. Now, little things like that kind of make me crazy. But anyway, Jess informed me that we have Paula in the queue. So, Paula, can you hear me?
Ken, how are you?
Pretty good, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, Paula Harris, nice to have you on the show. You know, I always love having you on here. And I was glad to hear you could make it. I know y'all have been talking about letting somebody fill in, so I was just glad to see that you made it. First off, Paula, let me get you through the routine. Tell everybody a little bit about yourself and why you're involved in this, and then we'll start from there.
Okay, well, you caught me while I'm running around the United States. I usually live in Rome, Italy, and I usually work out of Rome, and I'm a photojournalist. I've written a book called Connecting the Dots, Making Sense of the UFO Phenomenon. And basically, I just document and archive the testimonies of people that have been involved firsthand in the UFO phenomenon. And I do stories live, which means that I am doing a story here in this area. And I've just come from Hawaii, which had a major conference signing a declaration of peace with ETs in space. So that's really the big story.
You know, now I found that conference interesting because I know Therese was there working the conference for ICAR, and she had done a report on the conference last week when she came to the show. But let me ask you this, Paul, I mean, did you enjoy the conference first off?
Well, I did after it was over. I attended every single speaker and had to report for my magazine, Area 51 in Italy, and I also did a show. I did a show for Jerry Pippin while I was there. That particular conference, though, Joe, was historic because we had the ex-minister of defense from Canada there. We had Ambassador John McDonald. We had James Gilliland. We had Wendell Stevens. We had Dean Jones. We had a lot of really powerful people that came together, both ufologists and the politicians, with the people in the audience to draft a document of peaceful interaction with ET cultures. It's kind of a galactic diplomacy.
Well, you know, when I talked to Therese about it, she said she loved the conference, and I'm glad you enjoyed it. I really, really wanted to go, but it wasn't going to happen. I'm just entirely too busy to do much of anything these days. But, you know, I really did hear a lot of good things about the conference. Now, you know, I'm not quite as sweetie and nicey as most ufologists are out there, so I probably have a hard time attending a more, you know, nice-type conference. But because for me, it's hard. You know, I agree that we should have some kind of thing, and I agree that our contact should legitimately be, you know, peaceful contact in the beginning. Well, for that matter, in period. But my problem is I know that not all ETs are friendly. So
that's right. Well, we have a clause in there saying only benevolent ETs. The problem is this: it's not so much benevolent ETs and all that, but it's not having the weaponization of space. So if somebody said, "Is it about ETs?" I say, "Yeah, but what it really is about is let's not bring our garbage out into outer space. Let's not bring the nuclear situation into outer space. That isn't cool because we can not only blow ourselves up here, but whatever we do out there, we don't know what we're doing."
Oh, well, actually, I agree with that. Really, I think there should be much stricter laws on what's going on in space, because we were just talking about that just before you came on. Halliburton and the U.S. government are getting together to build a platform on Mars so they can start mining the asteroid void between Mars and Jupiter. That should make for some interesting, nasty little projects on Mars anyway. I'm sure they're going to contaminate and pollute Mars much more than we ever did Earth. But, you know, I guess that's something we'll have to do. But it is interesting here. I mean, there is a lot of new stuff going on in space programs. I mean, the United States has a new space program now, and their goals will be to the moon by 2020 with a lunar base there, and then on to Mars around 2025 and establishing a base there as well. So at least we're moving out into space these days. Of course, it does worry me what we're going to do when we get out there. And, of course, it worries me about space-based weapons.
Well, space-based weapons are terrible. It shouldn't be anybody's. I mean, never mind ours. I mean, somebody else's either. How do you control space-based weapons? I mean, that's basically, I think, what the conference is going towards. And not only that, but I think there also is a hint, a tiny little hint, that we could be, like, doing intergalactic war kind of scenario, which I think if I'm going to do that, if we're going to do that, if anybody's going to do that, you got to know who the people are.
Yeah, and you do. But I agree. I mean, I don't think anybody should have space-based weapons. I think there should be a moratorium passed, and nobody should be allowed to have them. I don't know if it's going to happen or not. I know there used to be some laws in the UN dealing with this, but the UN seems to have lost its will or its ability to inflict its will on other countries these days. So I don't know what's going to happen here. I know the U.S. is moving in ways that it normally wouldn't move, and it's kind of pulling away from a lot of its allies and other people on the planet, which makes me really nervous. But it just seems like all of this is coming to a head now. It just seems like all of a sudden, you know, for 30 years, nobody was talking about doing anything in space. And then all of a sudden, overnight in the last year, we got all kind of plans to do all kind of things in space. And I just wonder why. You know, I wonder what...
I was going to ask you, what do you think?
I'm not sure. I mean, there's probably several reasons for it. I mean, the need to explore is in pretty much everybody. And if you're an American, it's probably more so, because most Americans came from people who migrated over, so it's in their blood to start off with. So, I mean, there is a need to get out there and explore, and there's also a need to not be bored. But really and truly, it has to be something much deeper than that, because of the amounts of money we're talking about. Somebody somewhere knows something that they're not telling the rest of us. Because the government has never been willing to spend trillions of dollars on colonization of other worlds and mapping of our solar system in a major way until this year. So I'm just, you know, somebody changed somewhere. I mean, there was an awful big change of heart here. And I don't really see that it came from the public. I mean, the public's behind the idea, but I don't see that it was public-driven. In other words, the people didn't drive the politicians to do this. Something else drove the politicians to do this. And I'm just curious to what that something else is. Is it extraterrestrial contact? Is it time for us to go on to the next phase of the desensitization program? It just bothers me. It could be a lot of different things. But what do you think?
I don't know. I just know one thing. If I have to make some decisions, especially about money, I want to know what I'm looking at, and I want the truth, and I'd like to have full disclosure. And then if you tell me, like, there's hostile races or there's benevolent races or there's both, at least I can make a wise decision. But without knowing anything, you can't make any decisions.
Nina, that's a really good point, too, Paula, because, you know, if we talk about these contactees all the time that are having contact or abductions, it would really be nice whether the government comes out and says this is happening or not, that they said, okay, the planet is being visited by these three types of aliens. These two seem to be okay, and this one seems to be kind of nasty. At least you'd have an idea who to stay away from. Or at least you'd have a better idea of what was actually happening to you when you had a contact experience. So, I don't know. I would love to see full disclosure. Whether or not it'll happen in our lifetime, I'm still kind of iffy about. There seems to be a lot of people seem to think there'll be disclosure by 2012, but I'm not quite as optimistic as they are. I do see a relax in the U.S. government and British government and a few other governments in the way they deal with this. It does seem like they're letting more and more people talk about this in an open forum, but it doesn't seem like they themselves are doing anything. In other words, they're not stopping anybody, but they're really not contributing either. You know, they're not adding anything to the argument. So it's like they've taken this stance of, well, we'll just sit and see what happens. And I think, you know what I honestly think, Paula? I think the U.S. government is wanting somebody in the ufology field to disclose this. I really do. I think they feel like it would take them off the hook, and then they could come out after the fact and say, yeah, there's been some stuff going on, and we didn't want to tell you because of this, and this reason. But now that it's out in the public, we can talk about it. But I don't think any ufologist has the key piece yet to do it. You know, a lot of us have a lot of pieces, but nobody has that undeniable, beyond any doubt, piece of evidence. And that's what we need. We need somebody in the field to get it, but you know, I don't even care who it is, personally. But, you know, let me ask you this. Who's your favorite ufologist?
Well, I was going to answer that question with what, something that you just said. That isn't true. We don't have proof. You want to look at Jaime Maussan's stuff in Mexico? He's got film footage after film footage of flotillas over Mexico City, and none of those things are shooting at the Mexicans. He's got film footage, incredible. I think you saw it at Laughlin too. Film footage. He, for me, has the most amazing material, the most amazing film footage. They're not birds. Of things that are happening, because I think the Mexican people are open to it. And if you want to look at whether they're hostile or not, they haven't had any situation like that. Whatever is visiting Mexico is not that hostile.
Oh, I agree. What I meant by evidence is I personally think there's evidence out there to suggest the planet's being visited. But a UFO video is not proof beyond reasonable doubt, because anybody can speculate that it could be any number of things. Even though it is something that looks like it's not of this planet, it still isn't beyond reasonable doubt proof. It's just proof to add to everything else that's going on. And really, and I'm not talking about for myself here, Paul. I'm talking about for the general public. The only thing that's going to convince the general public that aliens are real is an alien. Not a UFO, but an alien. There's been hundreds of hours of videos taken. There's been better taken than Hami's got. I've seen much better than what he has. I've seen saucers within 60 feet on excellent video, and I've seen black triangles closer than that. The thing of it is it's not, you know, you can tell it's excellent, but you still can't prove that it's 100% real, and you can't prove that it hasn't been hoaxed beyond reasonable doubt. So you need an alien. You need somebody. You either need alien or you need alien DNA, but you need something that you can hold in your hand and hand to an individual that is not of this world. And that's the only way they're going to believe, because the press has been inundated. I mean, Discovery Channel and Sci-Fi Channel and the History Channel are playing hour after hour after hour of different documentaries, different footage. So it's not like the information isn't being given to the public. The public just isn't believing the information. And the reason why is because they can, as long as the average Joe can put a spin on what he's seeing, he's never going to believe it. But if it's an alien, or if it's a DNA that's been proven not to be of this world, you can't deny something like that. That's not something that can be denied in any shape, form, or fashion. That's something you have to take it for what it is. And unfortunately, we just don't have that right now. The closest thing we had was Lloyd Pye's skull, and I'm not even sure what that is. But that's what I was talking about as far as irrefutable evidence goes. We need something like that, because for me and you, it's not as hard, Paula. We can look at the evidence and say, okay, well, we got this evidence from here. We have all this videotape that Hami's got. We got this other videotape. We got this eyewitness testimony. We've got pilots, military people, people from the government, people from JPN, people from Milan, all telling us this is real, including Dr. Greer's 400 witnesses. But without that piece of the puzzle, that DNA or that alien, it's useless. People are just not buying it. And I talk on average, you know, to several hundred people a week, and they're just and we're not even talking about the radio show, just in person, and they're just not buying it. They'll concede the fact that they believe there's life out there other than us. Most people don't want to think that they're coming to the planet. Some of them may even agree that they're coming to the planet, but they don't think they're visiting anybody. So it's irritating, and it's like walking into a brick wall 95% of the time. You just keep bouncing off the wall, and until something comes out that's hardcore, it's just not going to change. I was looking. Now, here's a funny stat for y'all, ladies and gentlemen, for you too, Paula. In 1940, 75% of the United States people believed that this planet was being visited and that extraterrestrials were coming here. A society in this country, less than 30% believe that. So it's actually going down, not up. And I find that interesting in itself. That just bugs me. There's something about that just bugs me severely. I don't understand why in the 40s that it was so acceptable, and in the year 2006 it's not. That doesn't even make any sense to me, Paula. Little numbers like that make me nuts. They just do. They just make me entirely insane. But see, well, you're in Europe, so Europe's much different. Europe's much more open about this. I mean,
yeah, it's true, but I also heard a much higher number. If you look at the believe it even in the United States, the truth of the matter is if they don't believe it, it really doesn't matter, though, Joe. I really am not worried. This isn't religion. I mean, this is an interesting study of something that's happening to the planet. And you've got to remember that if we took all of this, including the disclosure witnesses, went to court, and people believe in the court system, don't they? And we use this proof, including the autopsy reports of Colonel Philip Corso, so on and so forth, including the film footage from all over the planet, including the military witnesses. I mean, it would be a given thing that we are being visited. I mean, everybody knows that. The problem is that in order for the average person, and I think this is the real secret, Joe, for the real person to digest this, it changes their whole reality. And they would rather watch the game. I mean, you know, it's a lot easier to go back and watch the game and have a beer than to try to figure out why, these people are visiting or we're having this situation with contact and so forth. I mean, it ruins almost, it heightens your awareness, it kind of ruins your reality, and you have to reevaluate your whole life. I think people choose not to believe. I don't think that they're waiting for a piece of evidence. And I think as a journalist, I don't really want to convince those people because, you know, they don't want to. And it's okay. I think it's perfectly okay.
Well, I agree. I agree with this. One of the reasons I like you, Paul, because we think a lot alike. Well, I agree, and you know, most people, unfortunately, don't want to take the time to understand this. I agree with the belief thing 100%. It's one of the things I gripe about the most. Matter of fact, I get on ufologists about using that word all the time too, because it's not a belief. You either know ET's visiting the planet or you don't. If you believe in it, then that's the same as believing in God. It's you just don't know 100%. So I tell people all the time: you either know they're here or you don't know they're here. You've either seen enough evidence to convince yourself that ET's visiting the planet, or you haven't seen enough evidence. But as far as belief, no, it's not a religion, and E.T. is not a god in any shape, form, or fashion. And they do make mistakes. There are a couple of big ones that I've heard of recently, but still, they do make mistakes, so that does mean they're not perfect. And it means they're somewhat like us if they make mistakes, doesn't it? At least in the fact that they can make a mistake. Everybody always assumes, and I never understood this either, but people always assume that either DTs are kind and benevolent and glowing light and just peace, love, and light, and as clean, as pure as can be, or evil beyond belief. What always bothers me is why people don't think ET's more like humans, somewhere in the middle. Some are good, some are bad, some are indifferent, you know. But they're not all the same, and they're not all automatons, and they're not all robots, and they do have individual personalities, and they do have individual thoughts and designs. So, you know, it's always bothered me that it's just a Hollywood thing is what it is.
that's what it is. The truth of the matter is that we don't know, and I'm never going to tell you I have the answer, but I'm certainly going to work at looking at what's out there. I'm going to keep working. My website has all the newest information. And, you know, I think human beings should look at themselves. I mean, try to put it from the ET point of view. If they're looking at what we're doing, I mean, then we have to have good people, evil people. And I think everybody's basically got their own agenda. I'd rather believe that whatever is out there has an agenda. I mean, if you have, like, 50 races out there, some races want to raise the consciousness of the humans. Some other races want to use them. Some other races just want to contact them. Some other races want them maybe to join a galactic federation. It's all of the above. It isn't like either or, and that's one of the problems of having to have an answer. I mean,
sometimes all this makes me absolutely crazy. It really does. But, you know, that's another thing from earlier we were talking. One of my biggest gripes in ufology these days is, and of course anybody who's heard me speak, or any ufologist that knows me already knows this, is I think ufology should present itself in a much more united front. You know, we're all working for the same goals, to prove that there's something going on in this planet, to prove that something's visiting this planet and something has an interest in this. All the ufologists that are working today will agree that they think the planet's being visited. But as a group, we do not present ourselves that way. And this is something that's bothered me. When I talk to people that are not involved in ufology who may have heard of something, most of the stuff I hear from them, and this really bothers me, has to do more with personality conflicts and ego problems than it does with UFOs. And it's always been something that's bothered me, and it's always been one of my sore points with ufology, and it's always been one of the things I've worked to change. Because, you know, most ufologists have pretty big egos, and I won't argue with that because I have a big one myself, but it's part of what we do. If you're going to get out here and speak publicly every day and put your butt on the line, you better have some kind of ego, because if not, the public's going to eat you alive. My problem is, Paula, is when they let their egos interfere with their investigation work. And I have seen a lot of that in the last 10 years. I've seen a lot of in-house fighting between a lot of different ufologists. You know, what they need to understand is yes, we all agree that we're visiting here. Happy birthday, Christina. But we all need to just present this as a united front. And as far as what we personally think is going on, you can present that to anybody you want, but you should still, at a conference, whoever the keynote speaker is, one of the first things should be out of his mouth is that, yes, we have this group of ufologists here tonight that's going to be speaking with you over the next couple of days. They all seem to agree that the planet is being visited. They may think it's for different reasons, but they all do agree. That has much more credibility than each individual does. And I just never understood why people don't take the time to present it that way. I really don't. But, you know, it might just be me. You've been doing this a long time, Paul. You've been speaking longer than I have. I've been in the field a long time, but you've been publicly speaking. You know, I know you've run into some of these egos. I'm not going to ask you who because I don't want to put you on the spot, but I know you.
I've been doing it for a long time, but 30 years. But you know something? It's the thing that bothers me the most, and it's mostly here in America, and it really bothers me because, you know, especially with Philip Corso, with Colonel Corso's material that's been just debunked left and right, and Michael Wolff was one of my big stories, debunked left and right, and people have never met these people. They've never gone and talked to these people. They don't do their homework. They don't read anything. They go on Internet, and they make judgments left and right because, you know, Internet has taken the place of real research. I mean, they go there, they Google something, and that's the answer. And what my dream is, and I don't know if this will help you, Joe, but, you know, what my dream is that we have some kind of course or university course where all the material is presented, all the ufologists teach like one part of the course, and the people make up their own minds from the material that they hear from each and every ufologist. With the one big rule, you can't speak against anybody. In other words, you don't say anything bad about anybody in public, something that I have never, ever, ever done. And the thing is that I get so frustrated because there is this kind of battle. And, you know, I'll tell you something, that's what keeps the secret secret. As long as it happens, it's never going to come out because I think the government's just laughing their heads off thinking, okay, well, those guys are fighting. As long as they're all disagreeing, as long as they're fighting, we don't have anything to worry about. That's basically the bottom line.
Oh, I agree with that wholeheartedly. I couldn't say that better if I tried. And that's the truth of it. As long as we're fighting in-house, the government doesn't have. We're not a danger to them. Now, if we ever get all together and get on the same program, we just became a danger to everybody. Because there is a ton of information out there. And no one, including myself, has took the time to take all of this information and present it in one coherent form. Now, you know, Ohio State now teaches a ufology course, and I think Penn State teaches one as well. I don't know what they're teaching, but I do know they do have a course in ufology. Ohio State has the Ufology Museum and all as well, too. So there are some mainstream colleges moving into these areas because there is some information as far as the professors are concerned that, you know, there is something to this. You know, and more professors and more professional people, not just scientists or professors, are really starting to realize that there is something going on, but they don't even know where to turn, Paula. I tell people if they ask me about it, you know, I'll tell them my own personal opinion and what the organization thinks, but we're an abduction research organization. we're not really good for helping you out if you're trying to understand UFOs or things like that. I mean, that's not what we do. And I will refer you to somebody, but it's really not what we do. And I mean, so that's what I was saying. You know, we need a just one big coherent roof. I don't even care who's in charge of it. But I really think that at all the conferences, and I've been to a lot of conferences in the last few years, and I've been, I hate to say this publicly on radio, but sadly disappointed with a lot of them. But on that note, ladies and gentlemen, we got to take a break, and we'll pick this up right back where we left off as soon as we come back from break. So I want everyone to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690. I'm your host, Joe Montalda. I'm sitting and speaking with Paula Harris. And we'll pick up right where we left off as soon as we return from the break, so please stay tuned.
Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mymbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
Captain's log.
According to reports from the Minnesota DNR, we are waist deep in a lake infested with...
Captain, the ship is surrounded by exotic species known as Eurasian water milfoil, zebra mussels, and spiny water flea.
Doctor, what's affecting our Vulcan friend?
Jim, it appears the Vulcan's vocal cords are clogged with zebra mussels.
Engineering, beam them up.
Oh, sir, I got no power. The milfoil is infested with lithium crystals. The spiny water flea are doing chorus line with the photon torpedoes, and the zebra mussels help block out the warp drive.
Bones, is there anything that can be done about these exotic species before they spread to other lakes?
Jim, it's as plain as the nose on your face. Just clean or dry out your boat and drain your bait bucket before sinking into another lake. If you see things hanging from your boat or motor, pull them off. If you don't, it's a hefty fine from the DNR. Remember, clean boats mean clean waters.
Have you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947? If so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the facts as he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
You know, finding the time ain't so easy. Not gonna find it in your coat pocket or cleaning out the attic. Time is elusive. But you can find some extra time at the Pizza Hut all-you-can-eat lunch buffet. Just a few minutes gets you endless oven-fresh pizzas with all kinds of crusts, including America's favorite, the Pizza Hut pan pizza, plus crisp salad and mouth-watering dessert that's ready when you are. The Pizza Hut all-you-can-eat lunch buffet, every Monday through Friday. Pizza Hut. Gather around the good stuff.
Prices, dates, times, items, and participation may vary by location. Dine-in only.
SRN
1690 AM Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
Good evening and welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Joe Montalda. We have Paula Harris with us tonight. Paula, you were just always just a fantastic guest. I have to say that again. And okay, I won't swear your head no more. That's enough, but...
Well, so are you great. I mean, look at the work you're doing. I mean, you're still working at it, and I think that's wonderful.
I like being able to do interviews, but I like enjoying the interviews when I do it, and I always have a good time when I interview, which I always get good information. So, you know, it's kind of a twofold thing, and I just enjoy that much better. Also, ladies and gentlemen, we will be taking questions probably after the next break, because I want to talk to Paula a little bit more about a few more things. But remember, the toll-free number is 1-877-213-4329. Again, 1-877-213-4329. Well, yeah, and, you know, Paula, after talking with Michael and Stephen and them, and Stephen, they all agree. I mean, everybody I've talked to agrees that we should be presenting this as a united front. It just doesn't seem to happen. And I notice, and I shouldn't say this because I'm going to get 800 million emails over this, but there doesn't seem to be as much infighting with the ufologists overseas as there is in the States. Any ideas on why?
No, I don't. But, you know, I want to tell you that I've kind of left ufology. Exopolitics is completely different. It isn't about just going there and telling one story or talking about your book. It's more a connecting worldwide with all of the governments to look at this seriously. And so the reason why in Europe, it is no big deal, because they don't have a vested interest. Now, I wanted to tell you that while we were doing this in Hawaii, it was beautiful to see Alfred Weber from Canada, who has a similar organization, working side-by-side with Michael. They drafted the Michael Sala. They drafted it together. But yeah, I've got to tell you, though, Joe, though, that Michael Sala's website went down, that he couldn't get on the Internet, that we had problems even with the Jerry Pippen stuff. I mean, his thing went down. Somebody didn't like the idea that it was peaceful, and somebody didn't like the idea that we were all working together. So I think that we had some serious problems with communications while we were doing this putting up of the galactic diplomacy, a multi-track exopolitical document, which we call now the Hawaii Declaration. And the thing is, Phil Corso Jr. was there, too, by the way, and he really lent a lot of his expertise to this. Everybody was on the same wavelength. Everybody wanted to get something done because there was, you know, like a document at the end of it. And you don't want to spend 5 years talking about a document. You don't want to spend 5 hours over a document. So people tried to agree as fast as they can over the different points of the document. And that isn't what happens when you go to a UFO convention or a UFO conference. A UFO conference is merely one person after the other presenting his or her information. Often they don't even sit and listen to their colleagues. They're out there at the vendor's booth, and they don't know the new information. And that's the part we don't do in Italy or in other countries. I was just in France, in Marseille. Everybody listened to everybody's speech, and there were no vendors.
Oops, illusion. Think I lost power. Something went weird there. Oh, that got quiet. That's not good. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I don't exactly know what happened there. It seemed like there might have been...
You hear me?
Oh, there you go. I thought I lost you there for a minute. That was weird, Paula.
Hey, now, what part did you not hear? The part about the trouble with the websites?
No, I got all of that. It's just like the last about 3 or 4 seconds, for some reason, it just went dead. I don't know, weird. Because I was getting ready to tell you, y'all had those Canadians in Hawaii, didn't you? But that's what happened, Paula. You had them damn Canadians. Now, I know I'm picking on my friends in Canada, but... Every time I have, like, Grant Cameron or Alfred Weber, which have both been on the show 3 or 4 times, we have major phone line problems, major. One show with Alfred Weber, every 15 minutes the phone line went down, every 15 minutes.
Well, I shouldn't mention Canada, then.
And Grant, poor Grant, you know, I had Grant on the show the week after they wouldn't let him back in the U.S., and we got to talking about it. As soon as we brought it up, not only did his phone go down, the main server went down, and my phone line went down. And my phone line didn't even go down during the hurricane.
Well, you know, there's somebody that doesn't want us all to get together. There's somebody that doesn't want people to work together. I mean, that's obvious, but we'll keep trying.
Well, we're much more dangerous as a group. I mean, if you could get everybody's heads in the same place at the same time and get them working in the same direction, yeah, we'd become dangerous because... You know, I talked with Stephen about this on several occasions, and Michael as well, about setting up some kind of voting block inside the U.S. Now, in order to do that, we need 1 million, maybe 2 million signatures, but if we can get them, we can set up an effective voting block on Congress, which means we can get some information, not everything, but we could get a lot more documents freed up, we could get a lot more people involved, because politicians start getting nervous when 2 million Americans start writing Congress. You know, they get a little antsy, so you'd get a lot more accomplished. You know, that was Dr. Greer's goal, but Dr. Greer went about it the wrong way. He tried to petition Congress directly to drop the security agreements with the witnesses he had so that they could speak publicly in front of Congress. Well, that was never going to happen. Once you have it, and I know this for a fact, once you have a security clearance with the government, you have it for life. There is no dropping the security clearance. It is a lifelong thing. Mine, I still have a Class 10 from when I was in the military and will till the day I die. As a matter of fact, I was just telling some people earlier tonight, I found out just recently, but every 4 years, the FBI runs a background check on me to make sure I haven't been running my mouth about secrets I may have learned when I used to work on jets and other electronics in the military. And so every 4 years, they do that. So they're never going to let you out of the disclosure agreement. But if Greer would have petitioned Congress for these witnesses to speak to Congress behind closed doors, Congress may have listened. That would have generated enough publicity for the rest of the public to say, oh, what the hell were they talking about? And then they would have had to give us something, because everybody in the country would have been interested. He just went about it the wrong way. And there's nothing he can do about it now, but, you know, he just...
I don't think that's the case. I'm going to give you my opinion on that. I don't think that anything will make the United States admit to this because of the vested interest in the technology. I really have a feeling that it's got to come outside the United States. If there's a landing in some big country like, I don't know, in Ireland or somewhere where everybody gets involved and it's on the major news and nobody can say anything because it's not here and it's not about the technology.
Well, you know that BBC had done a poll last year asking who would you believe to tell you E.T. was alive. Almost everybody, including the Chinese and the Russians, said they would only believe it if the Americans said it. They said if their own president said it, they would not believe it. I found that interesting because everyone seems to agree that if anybody knows the truth, it's the U.S. government, not anybody else. And that I find interesting, but I do find it true in the fact that a lot of countries have open projects dealing with UFOs. You know, a lot of countries do. But I noticed that U.S. and its very close allies don't. Matter of fact, not only do they not have programs, they seem to debunk everything they can. They don't deny it. Okay, I've never heard any government say that E.T. doesn't exist or UFOs don't exist. I've only ever heard them say stuff like maybe it was this or maybe it was a weather balloon or maybe it was naturally occurring or maybe it was a military project. But they never deny it. So no one can ever say the government's lied about this because they actually haven't. They just try to tell you it's something else. They don't tell you it doesn't exist. And even Project Blue Book said that they appear not to be a threat to national security. It never said they didn't exist. It just said they don't appear to be a threat. And that's always bothered me. That big blatant letters does not appear to be a threat to national security. But no one in the U.S. paid any attention to that at all. That was an open admittance that there was something going on, and no one paid any attention to that. That makes me just furious at the general public because it's obvious what was said. I mean, it's in writing and it's government project and it says, boom, in blue book, UFOs do not appear to be a threat to national security. It should have said UFOs do not exist, but it didn't. It said they don't appear to be a threat to national security, which is admittance that something was going on, but the government didn't think that it was a threat. So the government's never ever ruled out that we weren't being visited by extraterrestrials. They always just try to tell you it's something else. And I do think our government does have a long-term plan for the disclosure of extraterrestrials, and a very long-term plan at that. It was about 25 years ago someone had handed me something. It's called the, the desensitization program that the U.S. government put in effect in the early 50s. Basically what it was, is, and it says in great detail how they were going to do this, they were going to start out by inundating the press and cartoons. They even mention this. It says cartoons, TVs, TV commercial, things like that. They were going to start inundating it with extraterrestrials. They said they were even going to back Hollywood producers in making specific type of extraterrestrial movies. This is all written in this report. Then they also talked about other parts of this disclosure program, like they would go to another world, such as Mars, and find water, and then maybe later on they would find some type of microbiological life to prove that there is life on another world. And then later on after that, they would probably release that SETI had gotten an intelligence signal. And then after that, they would disclose, full disclosure, that we're being visited. So far, this plan that was given me 25 years ago has gone exactly the way they said it would, exactly. And it even said somewhere around 2000, they would find life, they would find water and other things on Mars, they mentioned. And they did. And they did, and NASA and the European Space Agency both said blatantly they think there's life on Mars. So, I mean, they don't think there's human life on Mars, but they do think there's life on Mars. So this program they've talked about seems to be in effect and seems to be working quite well. And if you pay attention to the media today, you will find aliens and everything. They're on keychains, license plates, T-shirts, coffee cups. Everywhere you look, there's some kind of extraterrestrial. I'm watching a Dorito commercial the other day, and it had nothing to do with extraterrestrials in a Dorito commercial. And as the car is driving past a guy with the Dorito thing, there's an alien head on the bumper with one of those, you know, cross-outs on it. You know, it's little things like that, but it's desensitizing the public to seeing them. You know, most Americans, most people in the world, for that matter, when you talk about an extraterrestrial, see someone on TV, it doesn't even faze them. They've seen it so many times now that they're kind of like blah to it. I think that's another problem that ufology has. that the press is in, I mean, not the press, but the television industry has inundated, and the movie industry has inundated us with so much crap, excuse my language, ladies and gentlemen, that most people just don't even have an interest in it. They're just kind of sitting back, kind of numb and dull to it. And that's another thing, Paula. How come all the blockbusters have to do with E.T. invading the planet? What is that?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe, you know, I'm hoping it's not what everybody thinks it is, you know. I'm hoping that it's not like a preparation for, you know, some kind of intergalactic war. I'd be so stupid because I don't think we'd win anything. But, you know, it gets really tricky, Joe, because anymore, a lot of the craft, and I have some in my presentation that we're looking at, I mean, some close up, are not our stuff. I mean, are not their stuff. It's our stuff that we've developed. So it is a scenario, then we send a bunch of UFOs that we've created to shoot down at us, so we're shooting at our own stuff, and it looks like some alien group of invaders are after us. I mean, that's a scenario. We don't know what we're shooting at and whose stuff it is anymore, because some of the really sophisticated crap coming out of, you know, Area 51 and so forth is so sophisticated and so incredible, you can't tell the difference.
I don't know. All of this stuff. You know, that reminds me of that NASA, that STS video where you see that object crossing underneath the shuttle. Then all of a sudden you see something coming up from the surface of the planet, breaking through the clouds and going right for whatever this dot is crossing underneath the shuttle. And then as this thing starts approaching the dot stops and goes the other direction and out of sight. Now, that's something under intelligent control. There's no doubt that whatever that object was under intelligent control because it changed directions and ice and space debris don't do that. There's also not any doubt that something was coming up from the surface headed at it. Now, I got to say, Paula, the idea that our government may be shooting extraterrestrials really bothers me.
We had a battle in 1952 over Los Angeles. I mean, there's photographs of that. There's evidence that something fell. I mean, I think it's on many websites. It's called the Battle of Los Angeles. I mean, it's really... So, I mean, that's something that's out there in the general domain. That's one thing that they know of for sure. And, you know, obviously we had a Roswell. You know, something came down. And how did that come down? Now, I want to offer another idea to you, Joe, that next year is the 60th anniversary of the Roswell crash. Maybe we should look at that as maybe a date for maybe somebody coming forth.
Yeah, I know the Battle of Los Angeles was during World War II, so, oh wait, somebody just sent me something that said 1942. Yeah, that sounds right, 42, 44, somewhere up in there. I don't know, Paula, it just makes me so crazy the more I talk about this. It's just, I got to learn more patience. I used to be a patient person, but ever since the storm, I'm not near as patient as I used to be. I just, you know, maybe you're right, maybe we'll see someone disclose. I mean, it would be nice if we could get somebody out. Daryl's been bugging the hell out of me to come down to Roswell because, you know, he's like the key speaker at Roswell this year.
The next year is the 60th anniversary, and, you know, on a commercial level, they're going to make a big party of it. But maybe on a commercial level, but maybe something will come out of somewhere to give us some idea. I mean, there maybe somebody will make an announcement. I still have hope that might happen.
Oh, speaking of Daryl, ladies and gentlemen, y'all know he's got a new book coming out, right? I'm going to be reviewing it. I think next week he said he's sending it to me, so I'm going to review it, and we'll put it up on the site, and I'll let everybody know about it. I'm sorry about that, Paul. I had to mention that. I forgot about it. And, you know, I've been kind of waiting to see Daryl Sims write a book, by the way, too, because, you know, he's as crazy as I am.
He's one of my friends. I really love him. I think he's great, although I don't agree all the time. But he just came back from Italy, did he tell you?
Yeah. We actually talked about that. And we talked about you, matter of fact, on the show when he was on. And so it's only fair that we talk about him.
I like
I mean, it wasn't nothing bad.
I mean,
anyway, it was all good.
He does his homework. He does a really good job.
Yeah, I like to give him a hard time. Me and Daryl agree on a lot of things, just like when I'm talking to you. I agree with a lot of stuff what you're saying. And a lot of his research congels with a lot of my research. Now, we do have points where we split, but... The biggest contention is...
So do I have to say. But that doesn't matter. We can still get along and we can still like each other.
Well, I get along with most of ufologists quite good, so I'm quite happy with most of the relationships I have in the field these days. But, you know, it was so funny because every time he comes on the show, the first thing I tell him, I said, oh, still haven't been abducted again? He gets mad as hell at me. He said, I told you they quit abducting me. I said, they still abducting your kid and your grandkid? He said, well, yeah. I said, well, you know they're still abducting you then. He gets furious with me. while. But he don't get mad. I mean, he doesn't get mad in a mean way. He just, you know, because I like to tease him about it. Because that's really one of the biggest points where me and him disagree. He thinks you can stop him. I think you can. And we disagree there. But we agree to disagree. You know, that's one that we coined that term about 3 years ago, agree to disagree. And I have noticed that it is starting to take effect in ufology. A lot of people are starting to say, yeah, I'll just agree to disagree. Because there's no way we're going to agree on everything. It's impossible. There is too much data, too much information, and too many different ways that this alien agenda could be going. You know, and then if you want to bring in the spiritual and political parts of this, I mean, this is just huge. And, you know, this ties and has implications for everything on our planet. So, yeah, there's going to be some points where people aren't going to agree. And there's going to be, but in general, everyone seems to agree that the planet is being visited, and I just want it to be presented that way. I'm going to keep pushing at it. Don't worry. I'm going to keep whining at them. Eventually, they'll get the point.
And I wanted to tell you about Mary Rodwell. I met her. She was also in Hawaii, and, you know, she does a lot of abduction research and so forth, and she used a great metaphor, Joe. She used the elephant. Each person feels a part of the elephant. Somebody feels the leg, and somebody knows, and they all try to guess how big the elephant is or what it is. And I think everybody has a part of it.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Well, that's always been our thing. We agree that all contactees have a piece of the puzzle. So the more of them you can talk to, the more pieces of the puzzle you get. And then these days, we're way ahead of everybody as far as that goes, because we just have more connections in the contactee community. And I'm not exactly sure why either, Paula, to be honest with you, but we do seem to be way ahead of everybody else on this. And, you know, I talked with Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs, and I kind of felt sorry for the two guys when I was at a conference with them in Laughlin, because, you know, they lost a lot of people to ICAR at that conference. Two of the people that Bud Hopkins, one of the guys, a major player, Cody, that he wrote one of his books about, he left from the meeting. He told Bud at the table, he said, hey, I'd rather go with ICAR because they know more about this than you do. And David, poor David, he was working with a group of ladies, these five ladies, and they have a multiple generation abduction, which is what we specialize in, by the way. And she had talked with David Jacobs on several occasions at the conference, and then she heard me in the hallway talking to another group of ladies, and the whole group signed up with us after that. And it is because we present it in a different way, and we do understand it a lot better. We have a much better understanding of the procedures that go on during contact experiences. We can tell you things like, you know, what the grays are doing, what the humans are doing, what the reptilians are doing as far as the different types of contact, what you can expect in your life. And when we tell people this, and it happens, then they're like, well, whoa, you know, these guys are right on it. And one of the things I have really and truly enjoyed about this job, and it is a job, ladies and gentlemen, don't mistake me. It's an unpaid job, okay? I can't call it a hobby because I spend too much time on it. I shouldn't call it a job because I don't actually make any money off of it, but to me it's a career. And the thing about it is all of these people, you know, are listening to us and they're realizing that yeah, these guys are telling us stuff that are happening in our lives and they're telling us stuff ahead of time so we can change it and expect it. But what's making me so happy about this is how many people write and tell me and say, Joe, thanks. Because of you, I've got my life back together, and I can lead a normal life, even though I am a contactee. And that is one of ICAR's goals, is to help a contactee come to terms with what's happening to them and have a normal life. Because most of them don't. When they first realize they're a contactee or an abductee, their life is in turmoil. And whether they have a good career or not, their life is in turmoil. And we've learned over the years there's certain things that ET are going to do at certain ages. And if we can make people aware of this, it makes it much, much easier for them to deal with this. And by doing so, it makes it much easier for them to lead their lives. Plus, we've now given contactees an outlet where they can come speak in an open forum where they're protected and don't have to worry about being ridiculed or criticized, so they get therapy. They're talking to other contactees. And it makes it much better, and it improves their life greatly. And it's not something I actually expected to happen, by the way. But when people started writing me and telling me about it, and Linda made a very valid point to me one night. At the X conference, she had seen Walt Anders. Walt Anders is one of her heroes from way back. And she was all hugging on him and crying and all kind of stuff when she seen him. And, you know, I never really thought about me personally, people seeing me like she had seen Walt. And it was about a couple of weeks after the conference, somebody had come to speak to me about some stuff I had helped them with. And Linda made me realize at that point that, yes, we are doing this. We are making a big difference in a lot of people's lives. So that was actually nice, Paul. I got to say, that actually gives me the energy I need to keep plugging away at this every week. Knowing that something good actually came out of this, even if it was only one person, would make me happy, but it seems to be quite a few more than that. So it is kind of interesting, and but we are working a lot of multi-generational cases right now where we have 4 and 5 generations in the same family that are having contact experience. And I find it very, very interesting. It's kind of scary, but it's kind of very fascinating stuff at the same time. I mean, because they're abducting in family groups. And another thing that's interesting, like with the grays, Paula, they'll see the same gray over those 5 generations, which means however they age is much slower than us. And what's interesting is one group I was working with, she was reading through her great-great-great-great-great-grandmother's diary. This is about 150-year, 200-year-old diary. In the diary, she's talking about these little gray people. She even drew them in her diary. And it's the same ones that she's seeing and her kids are seeing and her mom's seeing and her grandmother is seeing. And it's just fascinating stuff. And, you know, when you can document them that far back, it really makes a big difference in how people perceive this. It really does. But I've been just babbling. Let me ask you something else. I'm going to change subjects on you, Paula. At the conference, who was your favorite speaker?
You mean at the Hawaii conference or the O'Loughlin? Which one?
Yeah, no, Hawaii. I'm sorry, Hawaii. At Hawaii.
Okay, well, I really enjoyed listening to Wendell Stevens. Wendell Stevens is part of the old guard, what I call the old guard, and he presented, you know, one of his cases, but it was great just seeing the way he used documentation. I mean, he's what we call the field researcher, Joe. I mean, we have very few of those anymore. I mean, I'm one, he's one, Linda Howe's one. I mean, people that actually go there and actually do the field research. And he had not only incredible slides and photographs, he had documentation, he had, you know, he really is a person that follows along a case and doesn't leave it. So a lot of what, and you know, Wendell is a certain age right now. I mean, he's one of our true jewels in ufology. Well, I've never heard him say anything angry. I've never heard him talk against anybody. He works with people. He's just wonderful. And you know, the case that he was working with, and I can't remember exactly, you know, the date or any of it, was incredible. Just like the Billy Meyer case, because he was one of the first ones to really investigate the Billy Meyer case. And I went to Switzerland and went to Schmidt-Rudy and went to look at that case, too.
Well, you know, when we come back from the break, we're going to have to talk about Billy Meyer. But I wish I'd have caught that because, you know, you're the fourth person that told me about that that lecture. So I kind of, damn, I wonder, is Michael going to be selling the CDs from it this year?
Yeah, you can get the CDs online. Go to the ExoPolitics website and the CDs of everybody's story is there.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. I'll just call Michael and beg him for a free one, but... one of the advantages to being a radio show host. But I'll give him a hard time about it. Yeah, because, you know, people always ask me all the time about, is it all right to sell a book? I said, yeah, if you send me a copy of it. I said, I'll let you come sell it. Because I want to read them, you know. Because I have no problem with anyone in this field selling a book because, you know, we spend a lot of money on this. Everybody who does this spends a lot of money on this. So I don't have any problem with anybody trying to recoup some of the money they spent because I know no one's going to get rich off of this. Someone the other night told me, well, Travis Walton got rich. I said, no, he didn't.
He didn't. He's still working at the lumber mill. And I just saw him, too, so I can talk about him because I did a lecture in Sedona, Arizona.
Yeah, and, you know, he's everybody thinks because the movie came out he's a multi-millionaire. And I try to explain to people that's not how it really is.
Oh, no.
And they're going to quote me, Whitley, he's another me. I said, guys, they're not. They did not make all that kind of money off these movies. I said, y'all are misinformed about this. I said, ufology is not a place you're going to get rich. I said, if the best you can hope for is to break even. I said, that's the best you can hope for. It's not a money-making field. Because people seem to get this idea that everybody is in this field to make easy money. And I'm thinking to myself, well, if there's easy money to be made in this field, I ain't never seen it anywhere. But I don't know. I still spend a ton of money on this every year, and I probably will until I kick over. But to me, it's well worth it. It's well-spent money. I know a lot of people think I'm crazy for the amount of money I spend every year on this, but For me, it's well worth it. I've learned things that I couldn't have learned any other way. There's things that I understand now that I just didn't understand before. So it was well spent. You know, I try to explain it to people, but you know, they think we're getting rich. That's okay, Paula. Someone the other day told me that I made $200,000 a year to do Wake Up USA. Jeff, where's my check, man? I said, do what? I said, guys, Wake Up USA is a free. I said, Jeff donates the time. I donate my time. I said, ain't nobody making no money. But it's those kind of rumors, Paula, that get started, and then, you know, it's hard to squash those. You know,
I'm going to add another thing. The people that are really professional, the people that really work hard, I think that I'm not against honorariums, and I'm not against paying them, because it costs a lot of money to do field work, and there's nobody paying for it. Nobody.
Oh, I agree 100%. And I encourage people in businesses to get involved in this, to donate money to people. Somebody had asked about donating to an organization that we run, and I said, well, right now we're doing fine. We don't really, you know, because we don't charge for membership, and we don't ask for outside donations. There's a few of us inside the organization that handle the expenses, so it makes it a lot easier for everybody else that's involved. But, you know, I'm not saying one day there might not come a time where the organization needs an income. It's just at this point it doesn't need one. And it does make it easier, but I try to explain all the time to people, Paula, that, you know, these guys are spending a lot of their money, and it's not even so much of the money that they're spending, it's the amount of time that they put in. Anybody who speaks as much as you do or anybody else is putting in this much time or more than they would put in on a normal career. You know, matter of fact, most ufologists, if they took the time they spent on ufology and put it to any career, even if it was flipping hamburgers, would be making $200,000 a year. And people just don't understand it. And they don't understand how brilliant some of these ufologists actually are. Some of these people are very gifted and very talented with outstanding IQs. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, on that note, we got to take a break. So I want everyone to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust radio production. Now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Montalva. I'm sitting and speaking with Paula Harris. And as soon as we return from the breaks, we'll start taking some questions. So please stay tuned.
Captain's Log.
The DNR. We are waist deep in a lake infested with...
Captain, the ship is surrounded by exotic species known as Eurasian water milfoil, zebra mussels, and spiny water flea.
Doctor, what's affecting our Vulcan friend?
Jim, it appears the Vulcan's vocal cords are clogged with zebra mussels.
Engineer, beam them up.
Oh, sir, I got no power. The milfoil is infested with lithium crystals. The spiny water flea are doing chorus line with the photon torpedoes. And the zebra mussels have blocked out the warp drive.
Bones, is there anything that can be done about these exotic species before they spread to other lakes?
Jim, it's as plain as the nose on your face. Just clean or dry out your boat and drain your bait bucket before sinking into another lake. If you see things hanging from your boat or motor, pull them off. If you don't, it's a hefty fine from the DNR. Remember, clean boats mean clean waters.
Climate change could affect our way of life. Reduce your greenhouse gas emissions and help control climate change. Visit www.vcr-mvr.ca. Brought to you by the Voluntary Challenge and Registry, Climate Change Central, and this radio station.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mynbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
You know, finding the time ain't so easy. Not gonna find it in your coat pocket or cleaning out the attic. Time is elusive. But you can find some extra time at the Pizza Hut all-you-can-eat lunch buffet. Just a few minutes gets you endless oven-fresh pizzas with all kinds of crusts, including America's favorite, the Pizza Hut pan pizza, plus crisp salad and mouth-watering dessert that's ready when you are. The Pizza Hut all-you-can-eat lunch buffet, every Monday through Friday. Pizza Hut. Gather around the good stuff.
Prices, dates, times, items, and participation may vary by location. Dine-in only.
Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
SRN
1690 AM, Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I hope everybody had a nice short break there. We got them some coffee or some cokes. I want to welcome everybody back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study. Our members, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to start taking some questions here pretty soon. So the toll-free number is 1-877-213-4329. Again, 1-877-213-4329. Yes, we're going to open the phone lines. I know I've been hogging the guests, ladies and gentlemen. That's the unfortunate part sometimes about using a virtual auditorium, Paul. I can see what they're typing. yeah, they like to make smart butt comments while I'm talking on the radio, but still, we'll live with that. You know, the lady we were talking about at the break, that really sounds interesting in itself, but there seems to be, and then maybe it's just me, but there seems to be a lack of serious investigators in the abduction field. There seems to be a ton of UFO investigators out there. There's at least a couple of hundred of those, but there seems to be maybe a half dozen, maybe we'll say a dozen for the sake of argument, that are really seriously checking in to abduction research or contact research. And, you know, they're both different. So somebody asked me the other day about what's the difference between an abductee and a contactee. I said an abductee is someone who's been abducted and really isn't aware about it, and a contactee is aware that they've been contacted. Whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, they are aware of it, so they're a contactee. And it seems, now I don't know, let me ask you this. I've been asking this to all the ufologists, but I wanted to ask you this too. In general, let me ask you something. Over the last 6 months, have you seen an increase or a decrease in sighting and, well, let's just say in general activity?
In general activity, you're talking about sightings, right?
Yeah, sightings, yeah. Just general activity. I mean, have it.
Okay, let me tell you, first of all, I knew John Mack, so I've got to say that in the abduction situation, he said, and I've got to share this with your listeners, because John Mack, for me, was my idol, and he stayed at my home in Rome. I knew him very well. He said that the abduction situation had decreased a bit, because now he said they're going directly to the people. In other words, they're doing automatic downloads, and there's more contact. So I wanted to share that with you, Joe. The other thing is, as far as sightings, it depends on where they are. Now, for instance, during the eclipse in Egypt, there were sightings. In Mexico City, because of the 2012 calendar, because of things that are happening with the crop circles, Jaime Maussan is tying that together. I think people should start connecting the dots. We had the sightings just before the Olympics over Milano. We had five UFOs for 5 hours sitting in the sky, and who photographed them was the newspaper. So it's not even a citizen. It's the newspaper that's photographing them. Where, you know, it's where it's happening. Wherever it's happening, it's like a warning. And I think because of the Katrina situation, I should share with you that 2 months before Hurricane Katrina, there was a cross, in the form of a cross. There were UFOs, and I don't know necessarily if they were doing it. In other words, they're doing it because that's a symbol we recognize, but they were doing it over St. Petersburg, Florida, 2 months before Katrina. And that came out of Jaime Maussan's research. So that tells us that we're having the sightings, but they're around major events. In Turkey, Esen Sekerara tells me that they had massive sightings just before their earthquakes. And the people that are ignorant, though, are blaming the UFOs for the earthquakes. She said she had a lot of trouble after that because there were sightings before and after the earthquake. So I think when you're looking at where this is, look at the date, look at what happens afterwards, like Hurricane Katrina, and look at something like the form of a cross.
Well, you know, it's interesting you brought that up, because we do track UFOs before and after major events. We check sightings, in other words, like the tsunami. Come to find out, in the little place in India where I did the most damage, there were several UFO sightings a week before the tsunami, and then there were several the day after the tsunami. Same thing in New Orleans. There was an increase in sightings about 2 weeks before Katrina. And then right after Katrina, there was an increase in sightings. Plus, we had some National Guard guys and some New Orleans Police Department people report seeing reptilians on the ground in the city. Four separate reports from four different locations. And they were witnessed by other people in the platoons and in the outfits. So there seems to be a correlation between natural disasters on this planet and extraterrestrials.
I'd love to have that information, though, about the reptilians. Is that on a website? Is that in a, somewhere in a newspaper or something?
It was actually reported to a friend of ours who does research down here. He had called me and told me about it. He had also contacted the local newspaper down here because the local newspaper had did a full-page article on me and Linda down here, a beautiful article they did. They never even tried to bash us. It was actually a very well-done article. And it was a full page in the living section. The whole page was donated to us. So he figured he would call his cub reporter and that she would go ahead and produce this stuff. The problem is after Katrina, none of the people who actually worked for the newspaper came back. So they had all new people, and they said they wouldn't publish the story. And he even tried contacting some other local news outlets down here, and nobody reported. But one radio station did pick it up and played a report. And, of course, they just did it to make fun of him. But they did report it. Now, I do know from some other research that the two Army guys who had seen it made reports back to the government. And we have requested to see if we can get it. I don't know if they'll give them to us or not, but we did make an official request. So all we can do is wait and see if they'll turn over the information or not. I mean, it is public now. I mean, pretty much everyone down here has heard about it. You know, everyone's pretty much talked about it because, you know, there was four different groups that seen it, and the military travels in groups. You know, there's usually four or five guys to patrol, and the NOPDs were, at the time, were traveling three or four people. So it wasn't like, and another thing I found interesting about this, because I actually talked to one of the guys, was there was no hostility. In other words, you have four military, young military guys walking down Esplanade Avenue in the middle of all this hurricane debris and all this disaster, and some reptilians step out on the street, and not one of them tried to shoot them with their M16. I found that in itself to be very fascinating. No one felt threatened or tried to attempt capturing or shooting one of these extraterrestrials. I'm sure it was some type of mind control, but I did find that interesting that it didn't happen. But I did also find it interesting that these four different groups actually made these reports. The NOPD turned us down flat. They said any reports made to them are in-house and would have to stay in-house. So we're not going to get any information, any more information out of them. And two of the officers had transferred out to other states, and the other two officers declined to make any further comments. So, you know, I don't know if it's going to go anywhere else or not, Paula. If it does, I'll let you know. It is something we are keeping a good eye on. And the reason why is we've had several contactees tell us about extraterrestrials on the ground. There are supposed to be four major events where people see extraterrestrials on the ground before full disclosure. There's been two that I know of, where there's been groups of extraterrestrials on the ground after a disaster. And so I'm kind of wondering, you know, if these guys are right. Now, one of the things that lends credence to these contactees, two of them, 2 weeks before Katrina, said, Joe, you're going to leave New Orleans in 2 weeks, right? And I'm like, why? They said, well, there's a hurricane coming to get you. I'm like, whatever. And so they called me again, and, you know, they were very adamant about it. One of them's a case I've been working for over 20 years. And she just bugged the hell out of me. As a matter of fact, it was a lady I just said happy birthday to. And she just bugged the hell out of me to it, so I started watching the news. You know, I said, I'll watch the weather report and see, because, you know, I was just doing it to appease her. I didn't think any hurricane was coming. And I'm sitting there. I'm at the Grand Casino in Gulfport, Mississippi. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning on a Friday night. I'm sitting there watching this storm. I said, damn, it's taking the exact course she said it was. She actually drew the course out from where it was going to come from all the way to where it was going to go. And as I was watching this thing make this westerly jog on the news, I noticed it was going exactly where she said it was going to go. And I knew if it went exactly where she said it was going to go, it was going to be bad. So for the first time in 43 years, because I've never evacuated for a storm before, I've been through Category 4 and 5 storms, never evacuated, said, you know what? I called home, called my family, got my entire family together, rode out of here with 3 vehicles, went and stayed a week in Destin, Florida, called all my other outside family, told them I was leaving town, which shocked the hell out of all of them, so all of them immediately packed up and left. And it's a damn good thing we did. And it was all because that contactee told me that, because if I wouldn't have been paying attention, I would have just said, that's a Category 3, I'm not leaving for that, because I've never left for a Category 3. I've never left it for that. I've always thought those were weak, wimpy little storms, and there's no reason to live, I mean, to leave. But it was because of that person telling me that, and me sitting down and watching that I left, and it made a big difference. And she was very right. And the thing about I've been finding out about contactees lately, a lot of them have been making predictions, and a lot of them have been right. And it's starting to bother me a little bit, to be honest with you, but I've never met a true contactee that wasn't empathic. Everyone I've ever met was empathic, and most of them have some type of telepathic abilities. These seem to possess clairvoyancy, which is something entirely different. But it was strange, and she did make this, by the way, and this is another thing that's interesting about this. She made this prediction in a public room with about 35 people in it. We were doing not a regression session, a therapy session. And she actually came out in public and said this, so it's easily to validate and it's easy to talk about. And it was just very interesting, you know. And I'm not saying she's 100% right or she's always right, but she was right on the money on this one. So that was enough to kind of make me, you know, well, I'll pay more attention to what these contactees are saying when they're talking about upcoming events. And there's another thing I found interesting, too. Just before 9-1-1, we had been working with several groups of contactees. We call them core group members because contactees tend to group in clusters. And so we were working with several groups of core groups. Now, none of them predicted 9-1-1. But 2 weeks before it happened, every contactee I know was antsy beyond belief. They were jumping around, chittering, nervous, aggravated. They just, all of them told me the same thing. It was like they were waiting for the other shoe to drop, and no one knew why. And then 2 weeks later, 9-1-1 happened, and then we all knew why. They were all antsy and jumpy and crazy. So they seem like the aliens seem to know what's going to happen. It seems like that transposes over to the contactees. So now that we're starting to understand that, we're starting to get to where we can kind of catch some of these events before they happen and kind of watch for them or participate. So it is changing things, Paul. I mean, I don't know where it's going to end up taking us, but it is interesting, I got to say. But are you ready for some questions since I've been babbling for 15 minutes?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
I'll have to introduce you to this lady next time. I'm going to make her come to one of the conferences. Next time I know where when you're going to be at a conference, I'm going to be there. I'm going to drag her with me so you can, you know, I can introduce her to you. And, hey, look, she might tell you something you don't want to hear, though, so you better watch it. She's not real bashful about telling you what she sees, so just know that ahead of time. Let's see who we have up first. Let's see, TRMT 137 has been patiently waiting. Treese. Well, Treese was at the Hawaii conference. Well, Treese, why don't you come up, give us your first name and location, and you're live and on air with Paula Harris.
Yes, Treese speaking from Massachusetts. Good evening, Joe and Ms. Harris. Ms. Harris, thank you for a fascinating presentation at that superb exopolitics conference in Hawaii, where each address conveyed a wealth of information. Also, Ms. Harris, thanks for your outstanding continual efforts to inform the global public on the latest exopolitical developments. My question tonight relates to the Project Condyne report released to the public this past May by the British Ministry of Defense, pursuant to their Freedom of Information Act request. Now, Ms. Harris, your website thoughtfully noted a link to Mr. Nick Pope's comments on the Project Condyne report. I appreciated Mr. Pope's observation that this report brings further attention to the UFO and ET subject matters. However, Ms. Harris, did you find any significant response among Europeans that the Project Condyne report placed an overwhelming focus on natural, atmospheric, and man-made phenomena scenarios to explain the unidentified aerial phenomena? Thank you, and thanks again for your response.
Thanks a lot, and thanks for the compliment. I love to speak to people. I would have loved to speak more to you while I was there. But, you know, it's true. I know Nick Pope. He had come to Rome to do a presentation on exopolitics for me at a conference that I had on exopolitics, and it was in April. And he said that at the time he did the Rendlesham Forest case, and he had told me that he is going to be leaving shortly the Department of Defense, probably. And so I think when Nick Pope, if he leaves, because I don't know if he's still there, we'll be able to talk a little bit more. But in official capacity, all he can say is what he said, which is positive. He said, it brings, at least they're talking about UFOs. I feel, as an investigator, that when people go to that much trouble to deny something, when they go to that much trouble to deny something, it means somebody is getting too close.
So somebody feels that in England there are too many sightings, or there's too many cases, or they're too credible in England. So if somebody's getting too close, then what happens is then you've got to make a statement. Otherwise, why talk at all? Why don't you just leave it alone? So I look at it as an investigative reporter, and that statement was made because somebody was getting too close. Otherwise, they could have just said nothing, and it would have been okay.
You know, I drive poor Nick crazy, too, because I'm always asking him questions I know he can't answer. He tells me, Joe, you're trying to get me in trouble, aren't you? I said, no, Nick, you know I love you, man. I'm not trying to get you in trouble. Joe, you know I can't answer that. I still work for the MOD. You know, I got to try.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an investigator by nature. I got to try. Oh, speaking of that, the show you and him did together, we had outstanding ratings that night, by the way. I just wanted to tell y'all that. I got all kind of great emails that they loved both of y'all. It was, for some reason, the two of y'all together, they just loved that. I'm not even sure why, but they did.
I think because we're both very credible and we know the area. We work well together. But look, you got one in Italy and one in England. Right there you have some foreign, you know, researchers, which I think are really a gift, because there's people all over the world, and I think you should have, too, Essen Sekerara from Turkey. She speaks beautiful English. She has incredible cases in Turkey, and she would be good for you.
Hell yeah, give me the information. You know I'll get her on in. You know how I'm about contacting people. But it was just interesting. I got so many nice emails on the show, and so many people wanted me to tell you and him and Nick both thank you, because they knew it was early in the morning. They know you didn't get off the radio until 5. They know Nick didn't get off till 3. You know, they knew y'all
were... That was fun.
Well, they know, you know, anybody who was listening to that show that night, whether they were in the States or in Europe, knew both of y'all were going above and beyond. You know, let's be honest, you're up at 3 o'clock in the morning doing a radio interview. That's above and beyond your duties as a ufologist, let's be honest about it. So, you know, everybody was real pleased that y'all did it, myself included, and it was a great interview. I mean, there was a lot of good information that came out, and there was a lot of things that we discussed and talked about. I do notice that more and more of our fellow ufologists actually listen to the show now. Even every once in a while, they'll call in and ask a question. I think that's kind of cutesy. But they're starting to use the show for research, because there are a lot of times when we're doing specific topic-orientated shows. You know, we're getting ready to do a full month on exopolitics, which instead of doing one guest, I'm going to do two guests per show during those 4 weeks. And that's going to be all exopolitics, by the way, too. And I'm going to give everybody a chance to present their arguments and their cases and their discussion. And then probably the following month, we're going to do all abductions. And that's just so people get a much better understanding of what it is that we're talking about. Because I notice most of the time when I say exopolitics to someone, they look at me like, what the hell did he just say? So, you know, they just need to be educated better on what everyone's trying to do and what exactly exopolitics is. You know, I know you've been on the show, and Stephen Bissett's been on the show, and Alfred Weber's been on the show, and pretty much everybody who's into it, actually working in exopolitics right now, has been on our show. And, you know, but I think because it's so scattered, you know, 1 week we'll do this, and then 1 week we'll do that, I think the audience loses something in the translation. So I figured I'll give them a month, and after a month, if they don't understand this, shame on them. That's all I can tell them. Shame, shame, time to go back to school kind of stuff, but... It is, and you know, you had brought up John Mack earlier, and I have read a lot of, I never had the pleasure of meeting John Mack, by the way, and I read a lot of his work, and we were on a matter of fact, there's some stuff he wrote, I would have thought I had wrote it, I really would have, and so I was amazed, so I think he did quite a lot of legitimate research, and I was always happy that he put his tender on the line. If you know what I mean. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you all know who John Mack is, but John put a lot on his line, his reputation. He put a lot on the line. He was the first credible person to me to come forward and get involved in this. You know, but that's just me personally, and it's, you know.
Well, he was a Harvard University psychiatrist, and when you work for Harvard University, you put everything on the line.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. He put his tenure on the line, you know. I mean, he was a tenured professor, ladies and gentlemen. This wasn't like this was some kid that had just gone to Harvard and got a job and was out talking about UFOs. He was a tenured professor. And if you know what a tenured professor is for Harvard, then you understand what we're talking about here. He put a lot on the line. But he was one of the few people, Paula, that could pull it off. You ever notice that most of the other professors really didn't give John a hard time about this? Whereas a lot of the professors who speak today catch a lot of flack for talking about this. I guess John just commanded him. His personality commanded more respect, I guess. I'm not sure what it is. But it does seem like that. He had a more respectable air about himself, and it seemed like more people took his research as credible.
Well, it was his method, Joe. I mean, first of all, he never made value judgments. He never talked against anybody. He didn't say they were good or evil. He took, as far as the alien contact, he took everything into consideration, and he was a field researcher. Now, this John Mack flew to Africa to talk to those small children that had had that, contact. He flew to Tepoztlan to talk to Carlos Diaz. He flew left and right. He was a field researcher. So what he was talking about was not from any kind of, internet research or just his own private practice. When he heard there was a major case, he was there. And then he had a way of describing it where he left it kind of open. I think that, that's one of the secrets to saying we don't really know what's happening, but here are the symptoms. Here is what it's about.
And I agree. I mean, and it's the way we present it. When people ask me to speak on this publicly, I don't try to convince people about abductions or extraterrestrials or even UFOs for that matter. All I do is present the evidence for what it is and say, look, guys and girls, there is something significant going on that warrants our serious attention and a serious investigation. And I've noticed over the years by presenting it that way and leaving it open and telling people, look, we don't really understand what's going on. We can speculate on this, this, or this, but it is just speculation, that they tend to accept it much more readily. And it seems to be taken much easier for most people who listen to it for the first time. And that's a good thing. And, I don't know if I got that from him or from somebody else, but I definitely picked it up somewhere along the line. And I don't even try to argue with people anymore. And I have asked, because I've had quite a few listeners ask me to invite debunkers on the show, and I've asked all four of the major debunkers to come debate this on live air with me, and they all said no. Well, two of them I debated in a public forum before, and I kind of embarrassed them. So, I don't get mad. It doesn't bother me. And what happens is, I'm presenting the evidence for what the evidence is, and I'm saying, well, I said, this is what we have. Debunk it. And a lot of this evidence can't be debunked, so then they get mad, and as soon as you get mad, you done lost the argument. So I just kind of let them hang themselves. So they just don't want to debate me, period. They really don't. But I'm getting a lot of flack because I'm not letting anybody ask questions, Paula. So let me get another question in here. They say I'm hogging the guest. Let's see who's got their hand up. D-Dragon. D-Dragon, why don't you come up, give us your first name and location, and you're live and on the air with Paula Harris.
Thank you, JoJo. Ms. Harris, at the 2004 Ancient of Days conference, after the banquet, Stephen Bassett was giving a wonderful talk. And at the end of it, in the question and answer portion, reminding you that it was just after the Mexican Air Force had turned over the videotape to Jaime Maussan, and you brought that up and asked Stephen Bassett, what is the United States waiting for? The whole world is just waiting for America to go public with all this. Do you still hold to that opinion? Thank you.
Well, I think I know what they're waiting for, and everybody knows what they're waiting for. The people that have the most at stake are the ones that are not going to be speaking, and this is about technology. It's not about the aliens. It's not about what's inside the ship. It's not about even what they're doing. It's about the technology, and we right now are in a war state. I mean, let's admit it. We are really not in a peaceful situation where you can only do one thing at a time, and people are all afraid and upset about what's happening politically. This isn't the time for disclosure. So, I mean, I understand on a national security level that this isn't going to happen. I mean, it certainly isn't going to happen like this. So I don't think that, I understand that there are some people, I think, that do have an inside road. I think some people do know what's going on. But I think that they're probably sworn to secrecy until a later time when things are more peaceful, people are less afraid, when it can come out. But I have a secret feeling inside that it's not going to come out of here. It'll come out of somewhere else. I mean, and then probably the states will say, well, we already knew it. We never told you it wasn't true. And they'll just jump on the bandwagon because they have to. You might have like a massive sighting over some major city, say Turkey or something, where there's 30 UFOs, you know, and it's on all the news broadcasts and everything, well, then everybody has to get into the act. And that, in that case, the disclosure is in the hands of the aliens and not the government.
I hope that's the way it goes out. I'm not even sure these days how this is all going to play out. There seems to be several scenarios that could play out. You know, I was discussing this a couple of weeks ago with some people, and pretty much along the lines of what we're discussing right now, Paula. And, you know, one of the young people stood up and said, you know, Mr. Joe, you're assuming that they're all good and that, you know, there is going to be a disclosure and not an invasion. Well, like I told him, I said, I can't tell you for sure that's how it's going to be. I mean, as far as I know, yeah, E.T. might be planning on invading the planet, you know, and that might be how we find out. I said, I can't rule that possibility out. I said, but let's be honest. I said, we've been having contact for at least 6,000 years, and if they were here to help us, they would have already helped us. If they were here to conquer us, they would have probably already conquered us. So I'm thinking their agenda is much more involved than helping mankind or conquering mankind. I think it is exactly what it is. It's an alien agenda to deal with aliens, and we're just part of the agenda. And I think humans have a hard time accepting that because they think we're better than everything else in the universe. So being a part of someone else's agenda where we're not in control, most people can't deal with that idea. But it really does seem to be that that was what the truth is. It seems to be that we're just part of these alien agendas. We're not even the whole agenda. We're just part of the agenda. And I know a lot of people have a hard time dealing with that, but that's what the evidence shows. The evidence doesn't show that they're here to save the world or to bring us peace, love, and light. They could have done that 6,000 years ago, and it would have been much easier to do it 6,000 years ago. They're not here to wipe us out because 6,000 years ago, there was only 53 million people on the planet. They could have easily wiped us out. So, you know, neither one of those scenarios can play true because they've been here too long for either one of those to play true, which means this alien agenda is much more involved and much deeper than most people want to admit. And it also seems to be that, you know, there seems to be multiple layers of agendas. But on that note, ladies, we've got to go to break. I know I'm going over on the break, so I want everyone
to... I agree with you. I want to tell you I agree with you.
Well, we won't come back and finish talking about it. We just got to get to the break. So, ladies and gentlemen, I want everyone to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm Joe Montaldo, and I'm sitting and speaking with Paula Harris, and we'll see y'all all in a few minutes. So please stay tuned.
Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mymbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
Have you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947? If so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the facts as he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
Climate change could affect our way of life. Reduce your greenhouse gas emissions and help control climate change. Visit www.vcr-mvr.ca. Brought to you by the Voluntary Challenge and Registry, Climate Change Central, and this radio station. SRN
1690 AM, Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
You're listening to the Stardust Radio Network, where talent and technology meet.
Good evening and welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I hope everybody's been enjoying themselves tonight. I want everyone to welcome Paula back, because you know she does a fantastic job when she's here. You know, Paula, I know I was ranting just before the break there, but, I mean, really, let's be honest about this agenda. I mean, when we really look at this, you know, standing outside the box and looking at it, it does seem to be, and I hate saying this because I'm going to get a million emails over this because people get really mad at me for this, but it does seem like the human race is part of the agenda. It's not the actual agenda. And it doesn't seem that ET is really here to help or to hurt us. It just seems they have a specific goal they need to do for whatever reason it is, and we're involved in it.
Or it could be all of the above. I mean, there has been some contact situations where the people have, they have transformed their lives. I mean, there have been some positive contact, and there's been some negative. So we're looking at all of the above. You know, nobody knows what it is, or if they do know what it is, nobody's talking. So I agree with you. Looking at it as an open-ended question mark is much more intelligent than making, you know, decisions or deciding what's going on. And remember, it's always alien. Who says they think like us?
Oh, I know. Thank you, because I say that to people all the time. You see, Paul agrees, y'all. Don't. Well, you know, one of my things is, and I do gripe with people about this, and other ufologists as well, I said you cannot put a human moral or a human aspect on an extraterrestrial. I said, because honestly, we don't know if they think like us. We don't know how their emotions work. We don't even know if they have emotions like ours. We just don't know these questions. So trying to understand, you know, somebody said, well, what they're doing is wrong and it's immoral. I said, to us. I said, but we don't know if that's how they feel about this. I said, when we go out and abduct a grizzly bear or a polar bear and shoot it up and bring it up in a helicopter and pick its babies up and do all kind of stuff to it and then drop it back in the middle of the Arctic, half drugged out of its mind, we think we're doing a good thing. I said, now the bear might not think so, but we think so. I said, so you don't know what the aliens think here. You know, making assumptions like that are just bad. You know what that word means when I'm, because it's a G-rated show, but y'all know what I'm talking about. And the thing about it is, you know, you just can't make those, you can't jump to those kind of conclusions. All we can say for sure is we're part of this agenda. Sometimes the agenda seems to work for us, sometimes the agenda seems to work against us, and sometimes it just seems to be indifferent. And at this point, that's all we can truly say we understand. We can make speculations about what the agendas may be, but that is speculation. There's no hardcore proof other than what contactees are saying. So, you know, you can take them at their word, because there's a lot of them saying the same thing. But it still isn't conclusive, and I'm not beyond the thought that E.T. could lie, okay? No one's proven to me yet that E.T. doesn't lie, and so, you know, I have to take that in consideration that we may not be told the whole truth, or maybe they think they might need to hold stuff back because we don't understand or it'd be detrimental to our health or whatever, but it is, you know, one of those things we just can't assume. So, you know, I'm at the course right now that we're just part of the alien agenda, and hopefully we'll understand this agenda much better as time progresses. I mean, I already understand it better than I did 10 years ago, but... You know, like I said, it would be all speculation if we got into it. But I'll tell you something else, Paula. Any time that we get on this subject, whether it's on the radio show, on the internet, speaking live, there's always some kind of weird problem. If you touch on the subject, there's never a problem. But if we start getting into what the agendas are, there always seems to be some, or that, or the men in gray like to show up, as I like to call them. I don't call them men in black because they wear these dull gray suits and drive white SUVs. But, it is interesting that they show up, and there's been a couple occasions on this show that I've spoke about where we've had major issues and then had, well, we'll just call it visitations afterwards.
So maybe we should go on to exopolitics, because I'm not really an expert in contact. You're the one that is an expert in contact.
I'm more of an expert
in military and intelligence people that have come forth, and whistleblowers, and in international politics.
Now, I know we were on the contact, but I'm going to push you back on this, put you on the spot again, just because it's how I am. I know you know who Melinda Leslie is, and I've been speaking with Melinda Leslie. You know, she's working on the MILABs, or like she likes to call them, the REABs, which means re-abduction. But she had told me something the other night, Paula, and the only reason I'm telling you this is because it's just as you're doing your research over the
But I don't want to make a comment on this, because this is one of the situations I don't want to get into, and I do know her, too.
Yeah, well, the only reason I'm telling you is, you know, you don't need to make a comment on this. I just wanted to give you a little piece of information. So when you're out talking to people, if you hear something about it, you can let me know. She had mentioned something to me about backwards engineering of contactees. This really bothered the hell out of me, ladies and gentlemen, by the way. I'm not going to get in depth on it. When I bring Melinda on the show, maybe we'll discuss it. Maybe we won't. We'll see what happens. But I just wanted to mention it to Paula, because I know Paula's got a lot of contacts, and she talks to a lot of people. And just in case you ever hear anybody else talk about this, just let me know, Paula, because...
I've never heard of such a thing. I've never, you know, you'd really have to be a super expert. And let me tell you something, Joe. If you don't talk to other contactees in other countries, you cannot make these statements blindly like that.
Yeah.
Somebody that really knows what they're talking about has talked to the Chinese, the Japanese, the French, the Belgian, and the Swiss, and the Italians. And I find very few people travel around the world to talk to other contactees, and they make judgments about their own neighborhood. And that's why I really have trouble with this kind of situation.
Oh, I don't blame you on that. Just so you know, a full third of our contactees and members are from Europe or China or Russia. We're truly international. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about that.
Maybe she should talk to those people.
Oh, and you know what else?
I mean, a lot of the people that are doing these kinds of statements or making these kinds of statements are making these kinds of statements based on their own, you know, little corner of the world. And that's what scares the living daylights out of people. And I am against any fear-based opinion because we do not know what the story is. And to put more fear in a population like this here is really not doing a service to anyone.
Oh, I agree. And it's one of the things I had actually brought up with in this discussion I was having was, you know, I had said something about, because they're working military abductions, which is United States. Because really, as far as I know, I mean, I talk to a lot of contactees outside the U.S., and they do have weird experiences from time to time with government agencies, but I've never heard any being abducted by the military. As far as I know, this is a solely U.S. thing. And that bothers me in itself because there doesn't seem anything to tie it in with anything else. And I don't know, Paul, I'm one of them kind of people, I don't know how to explain this, but a lot of times I go with my gut feelings, and 90% of the time, 95% of the time, it pays off in big dividends for me. And when we got into this particular thing, because I do think there's something going on here, I'm just not sure what it is, it bothered me that all the research seemed to be U.S.-based. And it didn't seem to be any correlations from Canada or Mexico or Italy or Spain or France or England or anywhere else. And that bothered me because if the U.S. was truly doing what people say they're doing, then at least some of its close allies would be following suit, and I'm not seeing that. You know, I just appointed a new director to the Belgian countries, the Belgian-speaking countries, actually, Denmark and Belgium, and or Norway and, I'm sorry, but we just appointed him last week, and he's working that part of the upper part of Europe for us right now. And we had got to discussing this, and it just doesn't seem to be any correlation. You know, because this is what's funny, Paula. I can talk to a contactee in Los Angeles. I can talk to a contactee in Sydney. I can talk to a contactee in Rome, and I can talk to one in Puerto Rico. When they describe the Greys and what happened to them at age 20 and at age 30 and age 40, it's identical. It's identical. It's one of the things that gives us so much credibility as an organization because we have statements from different people from around the world giving us identical descriptions, and none of this stuff's been published, and probably never will be, to be honest with you. And the thing about it is, you know, we now know that it doesn't matter if you're an American or a Mexican or German or French or Italian. E.T. doesn't care. All E.T. cares about is your gene pool or your DNA is directly in line with whatever reason they're abducting you. And that's all they seem to care about. So I agree with you. Anytime you see research that is based solely in one country, you should question the research.
Plus, I think everybody that's intelligent, that's done some real research, too, has studied the MKUltra situation of the 70s, okay, the mind control stuff. And, you know, the LSD was used, and there was a lot of things going on that's not necessarily ET, you know, related. So where do you separate the spirit world, the paranormal, the MKUltra or the mind control stuff, from the actual ET stuff? It's so complex that somebody would have to really study that in detail. So, I mean, it's not that I don't want to touch it. It's just really, really, really complex because we're dealing with paranormal. Paranormal is also spirit world, so you're dealing with a lot of different things.
Yeah, I agree with you, too. Well, it took me a long time, to be honest with you, to really, you know, I started out as a UFO researcher 23 years ago. Actually, I'm sorry, I will upgrade X. I've been saying 23 years for like 3 years now, so it's actually more like 25 years. But, you know, about 25 years ago, I started out as a UFO researcher. And, you know, I'd done a lot of things. You know, the reason I got involved was when I was stationed on the USS Nimitz. These pilots used to come in and tell me about all this weird stuff they used to see when they were flying missions, so it kind of piqued my curiosity. And I started doing a little investigating, and then I met some people, some very credible people that said they had had alien contact, and I'm looking at these people thinking, now these people got high IQs, they hold good positions in life, they have a lot at stake, why would they say something so moronic? Because I thought they were crazy, Paula, by the way. It took me 15 years of research to realize that, not only are these people telling me the truth, but there's definitely something serious going on here. A lot of abduction cases. But I've been very lucky because, you know, I have access to MUFON's cases, to several other investigative cases. You know, our larger part of our listening audience is in Europe, so we have access to a lot of contactees over there and a lot of people who have had other experiences. And a full third of our guests are from outside the U.S., so it helps to bring the research all under one roof. It really makes us, as an organization, much more credible because we do have all these contacts now, and we do have all these people, not just, you know, people who live there, but we have people who are living there who have had contact and people who are living there that are doing research, and then sometimes we can manage to even get some of these people together, and it really turns out interesting. Oh, and I wanted to thank you for helping me get Hami, because you're directly partially responsible for that, by the way, and I wanted to tell you thank you. And thanks to that, Jaime and I have come to an agreement to do some exclusives along with several other ufologists. Just in case y'all don't know this, ladies and gentlemen, there are 11 ufologists working in ufology today, all big names, that the only place you will get to hear their first announcements is on Wake Up USA, the only place. These are exclusive deals we have cut because they like the show and they want to put the information out here first. So, and, you know, now, Paula, we have the ability to do PowerPoint presentations and show live video to the Internet audience as well. So it encourages the radio listen audience and the other Internet audience overseas to come into the virtual auditorium so they can watch. So Jaime's agreed he's going to actually come on in a few weeks, and we're going to roll some of his film live while we're discussing this over the radio. And I'll let you know how it works out.
Great.
It'd be very interesting. Well, it's another aspect that we're adding to the radio show, and it allows us to do something.
Well, tell him I said hello, because I consider him probably the most, because he's a journalist also, the most capable of investigators.
Well, we hit it off famously. We had a great show. We discussed a lot of things. And Jaime agreed to let us look at some of his video maybe first, because there has been two videos. Unfortunately, iCar was the one that found out they were hoaxes, but Jaime didn't have a problem. He was actually kind of grateful we brought it to his attention. One was at the X conference. One of our members caught it, and then one at the Laughlin conference. But he was happy. He was gracious that we told him about it up front. We didn't say it in public or embarrassing or anything. And we did discuss that on the radio show last week. That's the only reason I'm talking about it right now. So he agreed, that we could review some of his stuff for him ahead of time, and we could do some other work with him. So, a matter of fact, I'll be calling him in the next day or two to discuss some other stuff with him. And we're trying to get a directorship set up in Mexico City, so he's got somebody to work with local. And,
well, he's going to be publishing The Dawn of a New Age, Colonel Corso's unedited notes. He's going to be publishing them in all the Spanish-speaking worlds. That's a deal he's cut with Corso Enterprises. So that book is going to be all in Spanish. It's in Italian. It hasn't come to America yet, but it's going. That's new news with Jaime.
I was talking with Jaime too last week. He's doing a United States tour, but it's a Spanish-speaking United States tour. And I told him he ought to come down to New Orleans because there's a lot of Spanish-speaking people here now since the storm. They all came up, to help out with the rebuilding and stuff. And because I told him, I said, I'd love to see you. I said, I'll come listen to you in Spanish. I said, I still remember some Spanish from school. I said, then I'll talk to you afterwards. So he told everybody in the show that night, he said, well, look, if you want to come attend, it's going to be in Spanish, he said, but after the conference, he said, I will sit down and talk with y'all and explain to you, because, the video is going to be video. You're going to be able to see the video whether it's in Spanish or not. So you'll have some idea what's going on by looking at the video. And he said after the conference, any Americans that wanted to attend, that he would explain what was going on to them personally. I think that's a very magnanimous offer, so it's not something he has to do. He's already got enough people listening to him there. He don't have to take more time to explain to the non-Spanish-speaking audience, so I thought it was nice that he was doing it. And that was just a big plus. And we did set up some exclusives with him, some with Dal Sims, some with Linda, some with Melinda, some with Lear. But, we've been busy, busy, busy this year. And we've been keeping a lot of stuff going on, and we got a lot of stuff that we're doing personally. And see, for me, it's a little different. See, like, you're an investigative journalist, so, you know, I listen to what you're doing, and then occasionally I say, hey, Paul, I want you to come on the show, let's talk about this, this, or that. And so I get to pick up that information and accumulate it with the other information I picked up from all the guests. I mean, since I took the show, we've done 104 shows. At 2 hours a show, it's 208 hours of research is what that is. Of course, it is research that's being broadcasted live, but it is still research. And now it's available for anybody who wants to listen to it, you know, which is a big plus. And so it's the only way I could see of doing research in an open fashion where the whole world could see it, criticize it, and take it for what it was, without having to keep everything criteria safe. It's hard to explain, but for us, there's these things we like to call abduction criteria, and we won't publish those, because if we do, we won't never be able to tell who's telling us the truth and who's not. So one of those things, and that was also courtesy of MUFON, ladies and gentlemen, because I was actually with MUFON back then. Oh, I don't know if I told you or not, Paula, Walt Anders signed up with us just recently. He was on the show about 4 weeks ago. He joined ICAR. And I couldn't believe he did that on the air, too, by the way. That kind of caught me off guard. And so, yeah, we're making big roads in a lot of things. But, you know, getting back to what we were talking about, because I know I strayed from the topic, but I do 100%, ladies and gentlemen, agree with Paula said, if you're going to do research, I don't care who you are, where you are in this field, or what you think you know, because you probably don't know half what you think you do, don't localize it. I mean, learn as much as you can about a specific area and then move on. Look for patterns, okay? If you've taught, let's talk about UFOs. Let's say that you know there's certain types of sightings going on in Los Angeles or in New York or anywhere in the U.S. So you look around the U.S. and maybe you see this in two or three locations. Well, take it the next step further. See if they're in the U.K. doing that. Move through Europe, down through Spain, Italy, and France. See what's going on down there in Greece. See if they're having the same things. But you'll start seeing patterns. There's a guy called Larry Hatch. He has a UFO database. He's got all the sightings from 1940 all the way to 2000. You can even overlap them over each year. If you do this, I guarantee if you take the time to go do this, you will see patterns in these sightings. You will also see that there's a much greater amount of sightings over the free world versus the communist world, probably because there's not information coming out of those areas. I doubt the sightings are any different. They're probably the same amount, but it is because they're a communist-speaking country. I mean, a communist country. So you're probably not going to get as much free information as you would from other countries. But you will see patterns. You will notice that I think it's like 86% of all UFO sightings happen near deep water areas, along deep rivers, coast of like the Atlantic, Pacific, Gulf Coast, things like that, Mediterranean. Because anywhere there's a deep water area, you'll tend to see a much greater amount of sightings. These are just things you can do, and this isn't even hardcore research, ladies and gentlemen. This is pretty much basic stuff. Anybody can sit there, and if you don't want to do it that way, you can peruse. There's several different areas that you can peruse, you know, where you can find other sighting groups. So it's an easy way to do it, but how do you do it, Paul? I mean, you just check the different things, or you just listen for reports coming in, or?
Well, no, I actually, we have things happening all the time. It's just that I physically have to go there. In other words, I can read it on the, you know, on the internet, or I just can get in a plane or a car or something and go there. For instance, Edgar Mitchell just spoke in San Francisco, and he really was very clear about disclosure, full disclosure. I happen to be in the audience, so I have a statement. I have him talking about this, so I flew there to hear him speak. So I try to go where the people are that are currently making the news, the people that are have courage to come forth. I flew to Hawaii to the conference. You know, if Laughlin is happening, you know, that's probably a networking place. I go where the action is. I can't sit home and just wait, and Internet is not the way, the only way to go.
Oh, no. Internet is an okay research tool, and I say okay research tool because there's a lot of garbage on the Internet. And please, ladies and gentlemen, don't believe everything you read, okay? Do some research. Just don't take it for face value. Do your homework, okay? I'm sorry, Paul, I just had to say that. I get people quoting me stuff over web pages sometimes, and I said, you really believe that, don't you? And I'm like, that is not a good sign. it's just one of those crazy things. I don't really know. But, you know, we got a new president here, in about 2 years? What do you think, Paul? I mean, see, you're in Europe, so you get to watch the U.S. from a unique point of view. You see it from outside. You know, unfortunately, we have to look at it from inside, which is a much different view. And What I'm asking is what do you think, like, the next president maybe we get, because you know they're talking about putting Hillary Clinton up and running for president, and Hillary had a big interest in UFOs. You think it might be possible if we get somebody like that in office, we might actually get some truth out of them?
Well, you know, I believe what Paul Hellyer said. You know, I don't know if you read my interview with the Honorable Paul Hellyer, but he said all of that politics is one big charade. He said, basically, he said, who you think is running the government isn't necessarily running it. It's maybe the big top banks or the economic situation that's running it, and it's fueled by that. And I'm going to tell you, I don't talk about conspiracy theory, and I don't talk about the government very much, because I don't think there's a whole bunch we can do about that. The only thing we can do is what we ourselves feel we can do. And I don't think talking about conspiracy or all this kind of stuff really helps the situation at all. I think every government has its negatives. I mean, we just had a new election in Italy, too. So I don't want to just blame it all on politicians. And no, I don't think Hillary is going to be the one to come out with it necessarily. And I don't think it's in the hands. I disagree with Stephen Bassett. I don't think it's in the hands of our politicians. Half of them don't even know. I mean, this has been compartmentalized in so many different places. I mean, especially with the military, with the black ops programs and everything. They don't know. The poor people, I mean, they probably don't have any idea. I hate to blame people that don't know. So I think basically what has to happen in the future is that people have to become much more enlightened. They have to, like you said, do their homework. They have to do a tremendous amount of reading. They have to connect the dots. And they have to listen to those people that are credible that come forth with this information. And then eventually maybe there will be some kind of, group of real strong people who will say we have a right to know, and maybe it'll come forth like that, but I don't think it's going to come out of Congress or out of presidency or anything like that.
I just had to ask. I agree with you, by the way, wholeheartedly. So I totally agree with that. And as far as the government goes, I hate to say this on the air, but I really think most of the people in government don't have a clue. And the few that do probably don't know as much as half the contactees out there do. But don't get me wrong, ladies and gentlemen, I do think there's a few people in power, not necessarily the president, but a few people in power that really do understand what's going on. I just don't think they want to tell us, is what it comes down to. I really think that they don't have any interest in telling us whatsoever, and I think Paul is right. This is motivated by technology, and as far as the governments are concerned, I just don't think they're willing. You know, let's be honest. I mean, if the U.S. really has captured a UFO and we really have backwards engineered, and that's the reason why we have a lot of the technologies we do, we're not willing to share that. We may share with some very close allies, but we're not really wanting to share that with the rest of the world. And if the U.S. does come out and say this is true, then somewhere along the line, we're going to have to share this technology or it's going to start a damn war. So
we have to share it, Joe, because the planet is going to die ecologically. I think people ought to see the Gore movie that just came out that talks about an uncomfortable truth, you know. And I think that the reason why the technology isn't coming out, it will come out, it has to, because we'll finish the fossil fuel, is because it needs to come out just to save the planet, because ecologically we're not going to make it. So maybe they're trying to figure out a way to pay for it. I mean, it'll come out. It has to come out, or we won't be able to have a sustainable future.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I don't know. This stuff makes me crazy, though. You know, because people ask me all the time, is the government going to tell us? And I just don't feel like that's where it's going to come from. I'm not sure where it's going to come from, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. I really don't, but I don't feel like that's going to be the source. But I know we're getting short on time, Paul. Where are you going to be the rest of this year? I mean, you're hanging out in Italy? Are you going to be riding around checking out some places or what?
Well, I'm going to be at the MUFON conference. I don't know if you know Jesse Marcel Jr. will be there, so I'm very interested in his statement. I think he has a new book or something. I will be listening to Stephen Greer. He will be at the University of Colorado. He has a new book on his life, on his contact. So, and I want to interview him. And I will be coming back to San Francisco to speak for IONS, the Noetic Sciences, on the 15th of August. And I'm going to be MUFON. I'm going to be at the MUFON meeting at Salt Lake City, Utah. I'll be one of the conference speakers there.
Okay, well, y'all heard that, ladies and gentlemen. Y'all know where she's at. Don't harass the woman, okay? Oh, I know how these do.
People are really good. I just love them. I have never gotten negative feedback from these people. They're all great thinkers. Everybody's curious. I think they're all wonderful.
Hey, I got to say, so far the conference, as far as the people who are attended, I've actually been happy with most of them. I noticed that most of them do ask pertinent questions, and they are curious, and they are seeking the truth, which is kind of nice. The conferences I have problems with are the ones that are just, you know, ET shows, best I can explain it, but, you know, it's not really any pertinent information given out. It's just kind of, let's make some money and get together and make fun of ET.
Well, I call them the UFO parties, but, yeah. Well, people know the difference. I mean, if you're going on vacation, you know, you enjoy the place, but if you really want to know, I really encourage people to read. There are some new books that have come out this year, to listen to interviews, to put it all together themselves. They're intelligent people. They can put this together.
Yeah, and you know, that's the thing. Most people, when you take them as individuals, are very intelligent. It's just when they seem to get as a they become morons. I'm not even sure why. I never did understand that. You know, you get individuals, any individual you talk to mostly is bright and understands what you're trying to tell them. You get 10 or 15 of them together and your IQ drops by 80 points. I never did understand that. You know, it's like everybody's scared to be who they really are, and then, you know, they don't want to get be poked fun of or anything like that.
I don't, you know, if they're into this at all, they must be a little bit curious, because you can have other hobbies.
Well, you know, I hope to catch you in Denver. I'm thinking about actually flying up there this year, and because I'm going to catch the Crash Retrieval Conference this year as well. And I am thinking about coming, depending on how careers go come November, because the Crash Retrieval Conference is in November too, but I have still been thinking about maybe catching a Crash Retrieval Conference and coming over to Italy as well, because I was asked to speak in Denmark, and I was actually asked to speak in Italy as well. And I don't know. I have been thinking about it. I just, you know, time these days for me is a real hard thing to manage. You know, last year was easy for me to travel. It wasn't a big deal. I had a lot of free time. But unfortunately these days, you know, because of the hurricane, my company's gotten decent size, so it's really hard to get any free time. But I hope to see you in Denver, Paul. Again, I want to thank you for being on the show, because I know we're just about completely out of time. So I want to
thank you, Joe.
Oh, no, thank you. You're always a great guest, Paula. You always do a fantastic job, and you always have a good opinion, which is what I like. Again, thank you. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, I know we're completely and totally out of time because Jeff is letting me know that. So on that note, y'all all have a good evening, and I hope to see y'all all next week.
If you would like to continue this discussion after the show, join us in ICAR's Pal Talk chat room, UFO Alien Phenomenon, under the Social Issues category.
Have you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947? If so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the facts as he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mynbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
You know, finding the time ain't so easy. Not gonna find it in your coat pocket or cleaning out the attic. Uh-huh. Time is elusive. But you can find some extra time at the Pizza Hut all-you-can-eat lunch buffet. Just a few minutes gets you endless oven-fresh pizzas with all kinds of crust, including America's favorite, the Pizza Hut pan pizza, plus crisp salad and mouth-watering dessert that's ready when you are. The Pizza Hut all-you-can-eat lunch buffet, every Monday through Friday. Pizza Hut. Gather around the good stuff.
Prices, dates, times, items, and participation may vary by location. Dine-in only.
Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
SRN
1690 AM Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com